So we're talking with ML Behrman, and the lines are almost full. We'll have him wrap up that story he was just telling us about the tracks that he himself found. And then, I don't know, we'll just have to save the rest. You go find the rest, go watch his YouTube videos, or grab his books, too, because as he's mentioned a couple of times, he has these horror westerns. They're fiction pieces, but they're kind of based on a lot of the research he's made over the last couple of years in the desert. And that's where he spends a lot of his time, as you will see. And here we get to your questions, your comments coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. What I like so much about what ML Behrman does in his books and in his videos is that he is the real deal. He is a guy who goes out into the desert. He is the guy who tries to track down, as both literally and figuratively, the origins of these stories. And I don't, just before I get to the phones, and there's a lot of people hanging on, but how would you rank yourself up, you know, with regard to people who know the Mojave?
Boy, that's a hard question. You know, I had a professor told me once, anyone who calls himself an expert, run away from. Right. Been out here 30 years. I know enough how to stay alive and by myself out in the middle of nowhere. So that's what I would say. You know, I'm confident I can handle the situation,
which is handy when you're finding big giant prints of your own.
Yeah. Well, that was the. I'll just finish that real quick. We took pictures of it, and I actually went out there by myself the next day to see if I could track this thing. And I wasn't able to find any more prints, but as I was looking at, I was like, well, why did it cross here? And why are there only two prints? And when I actually circled around and looked down the spine of the hill that was behind it, I saw that whatever it was trying its best not to leave prints. And it had gone down the spine of these rocks, crossed at the most narrow spot where it would only leave two prints because it had to, and then up the other side. And I'll try and make this real quick. A couple months later, I'm in a saloon. I'm having lunch. I'm with the buddy who was with me that day, and he was over talking to someone. He comes over, and he goes, hey, remember that print we found? I'm like, yeah. He goes, there's a guy here who wants to talk to you. So the guy came over, and he told me a story about 20 years earlier. He was in the same area hunting, and he had an encounter with something that night that came into his campsite and left the same tracks. And He was in his tent, and he had his truck there, and he said he heard something step up onto the bumper of his truck because he heard the springs creak and rifle through the back of his truck, jump off, and then walk towards his tent. And when he called out, the thing stopped. He said he could hear something breathing really heavy, and when he turned on his flashlight, it ran off, but it left the same type tracks. And he goes, whatever you found, I encountered out there 20 years earlier. And like I say, I've always been like, okay, there's got to be an explanation other than you don't go to the paranormal
right.
or anything weird.
Right.
First.
It's too easy.
Yeah, exactly. But I couldn't explain it. And man, I examined that print. I was like, could this be two prints that are overlaid? You know, could this be something that I don't know what, like, you know, but there was nothing. I was like, I can see toe prints. I can see where the toes grabbed in just like mine. And the other thing was, like I said, I weigh 250 pounds, and jumping up and down, I still couldn't leave as deep a print as this thing was in the sand. It had really compressed it.
Well, that would have been a natural place to transition into the Iguanodon story, but we don't have time. So let's get to Mark. Let's get to Mark in Hollywood, Florida, for ML Behrman on Coast to Coast AM. Mark,
hey, how are you, Ian? You're doing an awesome job, man. I'm really enjoying having you fill in for George.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Behrman, for coming on and speaking to us. I've been listening to Coast for about 6 months. My 94-year-old grandfather actually introduced me to the show. He and I've enjoyed a lot of with my involvement in academia. I've enjoyed a lot of the open conversation, and I thought, Mr. Behrman, you may be a resource I may be able to tap quickly. Let me start off by saying, sorry, I'm at work. I was just lifting something heavy. Let me start by saying that although I was in Northern California driving this incredibly large amount of marijuana south to Mexico, which goes contrary to where you think it would be going, I'm not going to get into that. But
contrary to that, close to Newcastle.
I grew up very Republican. I don't use cannabis. My parents raised me very Republican. My father was a state representative. I'm not going to go into too much, but my interest in all of this was purely financial. And so we're driving, and my brother's doing the driving. I'm napping my ass off. I have no idea to this day. I couldn't tell you where we were in the Mojave. I wish I would have asked or made some sort of notes, but I was in an incredible state of shock and trying to hide it from my brother. So I woke up and I asked him to pull over as we had consumed some energy drinks, and I really had to urinate, and it didn't do anything to wake me up, and it wasn't safe for me to drive. So anyway, I woke up, asked him to let me out to pee. I go out the camper. I get out as close to the road, meeting the edge as possible to pee, because I don't want to walk in anything that's not road. And I see this little – I'm carrying – I don't know if people use them so much anymore, but back then we were using – it was like a – it used batteries, but it was like a lantern. It was like a battery-powered lantern that had –
Right, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, so I see this little red – like a red – pointed object sticking out of the sand near some scrub. And when I was done peeing, I walked over to it and I picked it up. It came right out of the sand and it felt like a pouch filled with what I would say would be $800 to $1,000 in $100 bills is what I imagined in my mind at the time. And I said, yep, going in my pocket, not telling anybody about it. And just as I go to pick it up, it sounds so crazy. I've never told anybody. The best I could explain would be like a laser pen, but I could see the entire laser. And shot up within a split second when I went to pick it up out of the ground. I got an extreme feeling of when you need to one day, we'll bring you back here. And so I stuck it in my pocket. I got in the car. My brother asked me what was wrong. I guess he saw it on my face.
What did you stick in your pocket so I understand? The laser pen?
It turned out to be a crudely sewn shut little red, almost like a pillow that would go along with a doll set, for instance. It looked like a very tiny pillow that had been very rudimentarily on one side sewn together. And it felt like it was a wad of money. And I don't know why I was thinking it was a wad of money, because I'm such a greedy person by nature. And I don't believe in things. I'm somewhat more cynical than most. But
help me. This has been very interesting, but I also want to make sure I really get to the crux of it so that ML can comment. So you took this what looked like a pillow or something that would have come with a doll set filled with money, and you stuck that in your pocket. You jumped back in the truck.
Stuffed it in my pocket, jumped back in the RV. It was a very large RV.
But was somebody did you see somebody with a laser light?
Yes, just for a split second, as quick a split second as I could possibly, split second, less than a second, a 50th of a second maybe.
Well, that's pretty good. But so, and then you'd grab that and you went. What was inside the pillow later when you opened it?
Okay, later on when I opened it, which was 15 hours later, because at a point I tried to rip it open and it wasn't as crudely sewn as I thought it was. I said, okay, I put it back in my pocket. I waited till I got home. I took my knife. I cut the threads. Inside the very top was what looked like somebody had tied to something firmly anchored and was making rope crudely from strands of something or other found in nature. That was stuffed on top. Underneath that was a, now I'm, I spent some time in the pawn business. I know precious metals. The statue, I believe, is bronze or copper. I'm not entirely sure. With a gold top that was handmade and of a little bezel that it could be, a necklace could be fit through it. It was obviously made by hand, both the statue of what looks to me like an African-American tribesman holding two sticks with coverings over his crotch and his behind. And coverings over the size of his hips for whatever reason. Just little.
All right. So, first of all, we would probably say an African tribesman as opposed to an African-American tribe, but I understand what you're saying.
Now,
wait, just so I understand. Do you still have this with you?
Underneath the statue, absolutely. Underneath the statue, and I have pictures, I've put on gloves, and I've tried to lay it all out as carefully as possible and preserve its integrity. Beneath all of that, there is very, very, very old writing in Spanish wrapped around extremely old cloth. Now, everybody, I've taken it to professors in the South Florida area. Some have told me, absolutely not, that is not South American, that it's African. Some people have said that is not African, that is voodoo.
Huh.
I've never been able to get any answers. It's been the bane of my last 4 years.
Well, let's see if we can help you out tonight. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. You were on hold a while before we got on the air. I'm going to ask you just to hang on for another 2 minutes longer so that Donna can get your information, and that way you can take a photo of it. ML, you'd be cool with making a way for him to be able to share a photo with you?
Yeah. Actually, I was just thinking, I've got a friend who's really into historical mining and Spanish treasure stuff. He would be the guy to show it to. You can go ahead and send it to me. I can have him take a look at it and see if it's anything connected with old Spanish.
Yeah, and there's also these proto-languages, which you know about, and some people don't realize, like some things which we mistake for Spanish, like the word Arizona is actually, you know, transliterated from Native American languages, which are still used. Like I think Papago Pima is like the third most common language spoken, or maybe fourth in Arizona after English, Spanish, and then Apache, I think, then there's Papago Pima, but that may be where the word Arizona comes from. So there was some, you know, there's somewhere along the line, there may be some permutation that came along from a culture clash. Very interesting. Well, Mark, don't go anywhere before we get that information so we can hook you up with Emil Behrman, and let's get some of the other people who are waiting on too. In the meantime, Joseph is in San Diego, and yeah, he's got a lost treasure story.
Well, I know I've heard so many, you know, for one thing, just to start off, the earth is always moving within the Colorado Mountains. And I've seen videos on YouTube where guys are going back there in places where no one's been, and they're finding gold in different parts of the mountains because it's constantly shifting. We're constantly getting upheavals of gold. But there's one that has never been found in Coronado off the beach, which was a ship that had gambling on it, and it lost like all these silver coins, and no one found the silver coins yet. They found the beach part of the shipwreck, but
yeah,
there's so many.
I read about that
treasure
recently.
Out there.
Yeah, I read about that recently. That's very interesting.
Any hot stories of hot treasures, or we just keep looking for these billion-pound gold sunken by Spanish galleons that?
Yeah, well, let's find out. ML, let's talk about some of the outlaws, too. So Joseph brings up a good point there. There were lots of that type of activity in the Mojave with people that we think would rob banks, run out to the desert, hide out for a while. I mean, what are some of the treasure stories you've come across?
I know a bunch. I'm not really a treasure guy because that's not what I am really interested in, but there are just a ton of stories of outlaws, lost mining shipments that got caught in a flash flood, and
right.
You know, a wagon of bullion is supposedly buried in the lake, riverbed, or what was a riverbed. There are tons of lost treasure stories.
You brought up the Wash a couple of times, and for people that don't live in this part of the country, they may not understand just how lethal a wash is. I mean, I know what it is. You know, it's these flash flood dry bed creeks for most of the time, but then when the water hits the mountains, it's got to go somewhere.
Right.
Those washes are deadly.
That's when we get flash floods. It'll rain very violently for a short period of time. It'll cascade down the mountains, and when it hits the desert floor, it just spreads out, or it follows the ravines, and we call them washes because the water will bulldoze trees, boulders, and everything out of there. So it's just a flat thing of sand.
And there's always going to be somebody, this happens in Arizona tragically all the time, where people are going to be playing somewhere not realizing that there's a storm that's not even near them. That's dumped the water, and the wash just suddenly, it's literally like a wall of water that can be 5, 6, 8 feet high, just coming barreling down the wash. And cars, campers, other things just get washed away.
It's like it's liquid mud, too, and there's boulders churning around in that.
Right. It's a slurry.
It just flattens anything it hits.
And then when the wash stops, it just immediately settles. And then you've got all these people under, 2 feet of mud. And if you don't find them right away, there's no finding them. It's really tragic. So let me get Annie on a wild card line. She lived in the desert near Vegas. Hey, Annie, we've got a minute here for you.
Glad for you to be back.
Thank you.
Out from Las Vegas, and all you could see in every direction was sand. If it was high noon, you couldn't navigate. If it was night, you couldn't navigate.
Yeah, that's true.
The stars. There was a gentleman with two wives and 17 children that was the nearest neighbor that rescued us at one time. And he drove us through a sandstorm, and the sand was so heavy that it wiped out the road.
Yeah.
You couldn't see the road. It's dangerous. If you don't know how to navigate it, you can't find the road because there's sand all over the road. There's no road anymore. You don't know where you are. You can get lost forever out there.
Yeah, the haboobs, as we call them here in Arizona. And when those haboobs, you can see them coming, and it's just like a curtain. And it's a curtain that's like 100 stories high, and it's like somebody's pulling a sheet over you, and it's just amazing because you're right. You cannot, at that times like that, you cannot even see your hand in front of your face.
Heavy sandstorm. I mean, a severe sandstorm can be dangerous because you lose the road and you're lost.
Yep. Well, I think that accounts for it. And thank you, Annie. I'm glad to hear from you, and God bless you. And there's a lot of people that want to get on still for ML Bearman, so. Let's just go ahead and pause here for the moment on phone calls. We'll get to all the rest of what we can coming up next half hour. But let's say that. Let's make that point again. This is how people get lost, is that weather can be very unpredictable in the Mojave. And so when there's a reason why you can find something and then, you could have 2 feet of sand over it within a week and nobody knows where it was. And all of the natural landmarks that you thought were there are gone. It brings me back to a story that ML told before in our first hour of our conversation. The good news was the guy got away from a devil cult because he had boots on. The bad news was he got away from a devil cult only wearing boots and pants and literally was hiding out in rocks, and that's where the rattlesnakes are, and that's where all sorts of other things are. But it's not just that. It's the stuff we can't quite explain, which we're going to be getting to coming up. We've got people hanging on. Blair is in Sedona with the Death Valley camping story. Wayne in Chicago and Murphy in Barstow, all about the mysteries of the Mojave. We'll get to that coming up next with ML Bearman on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Ponet. All right, and ML Bearman, our last half hour, it's just flown by, but the beauty is that if you haven't heard all the stories you wanted to hear, or you heard me tease something which I haven't had a chance to get to, then you can find out more by linking up and grabbing any of his books. Mojave Mysteries Volume 1 is the nonfiction book, and then he's got a fiction series of Western horror It's just super fun, but what a great guy. And he's doing the kind of original research that we like to hear about more from authors on Coast to Coast AM. So we'll get back to that with your questions and things that have happened to you, too. We'll get those like Blair. And then I can't wait to talk to Manuel, who's in San Antonio, who has a tarantula story of his own. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Let's pick it up where we left off. We have Blair in Sedona, Arizona, not far from me. Just drove through there the other day, Blair. You're talking with M.L. Behrman, Mojave Mysteries.
Deacon Punnett, wiser than a serpent, more harmless than a dove. Good to hear you on Coast again, sir.
That's nice of you. Thank you so much. So what happened to you?
Well, 1980, I had a one-week camp out in Death Valley with three other persons. I audio cassette recorded sort of a play-by-play of a San Francisco press photographer placing a canoe, you'll know about this, Mr. Behrman, on the Badwater Basin Pool, 280 feet below sea level, the lowest depth of the United States continent. He was floating on Death Valley. It was symbolic because at the time he was suffering from brain cancer, and this was his last camping travel adventure before passing on 6 months later. God bless Tom Bullock. During the campfire-lit 35-degree evenings, he would see a lady of light visit upon him, and that gets to your quote, reference, Mr. Behrman, to spiritual beings living between worlds. So my question to you is, do you have some proactive desert stories whereby those with, say, terminal illness and such play out their final acts as flesh and blood mortals?
That's a very interesting story.
You reminded me of something. Now, story-wise, I do have a couple, but they're people that came to the desert to end their lives who committed suicide, because of their illness. But what you mentioned, this being of light, there is a story, and I'm working on an episode. They call it the White Lady, which is an apparition that people have reported seeing in a variety of situations. Some where they were at areas that were considered vortexes or spiritual centers. There's one spot I want to do called the Shaman's Eye, and it's an actual rock formation up in the Mojave Preserve that has a little keyhole at the very top, and at a certain time of the year, the sun shines through there and illuminates an area on the desert floor. And I have a account from someone who was there at that time and encountered one of these apparitions. Then there's other stories of the White Lady appearing to people in various parts of the Mojave in a threatening aspect, and also in a very healing type aspect. So it's very interesting that your friend who was in the final stages experienced something like that, because
yeah, really.
I have heard from other people about just such a thing.
Wayne is in Chicago with stories of young men found without organs. Did we lose Wayne?
No, you didn't. Can you hear me?
Okay. I can, buddy. Go ahead.
Yes. I want to say, first of all, Dr. Punnett, that sounds so good to me.
Anybody can get one. You could too, Dr. Wayne. I promise you.
Wow. Ian, do you still have relatives in Andersonville?
Oh, yeah. In the area. Yeah.
Okay. Make sure you let Tom Danheiser know. The next time you come to Chicago, tell Tom to let me know so we can meet up. I can take you out to lunch.
Oh, you're very kind. That could easily happen. And I would, it's good. I promise you, I if you follow me on Twitter, you send me info, I'll do that. Okay?
Okay, yeah. I'm still in Edgewater, uptown area.
Oh, it's just by my mother-in-law. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Now, here's one for you guys. You need to be sitting down for this one now. Okay, there was a young male. He was a model. He was originally from Atlanta. So he went to L.A., trying to get into that modeling, acting industry. So he went to from Atlanta to L.A. on a plane. So what he did was he rented a car to drive back to Las Vegas. but the car broke down in the middle of the Death Valley, a five-hour drive from Las Vegas, from L.A. to Las Vegas, five-hour drive. It broke down in the middle of the drive. So a California highway patrolman saw him walking after his car broke down, picked him up, took him to a gas station. So he was waiting for his friend from L.A. to come pick him up. He disappeared, vanished in the thin air. 74 days later, his body was found 2 miles from the gas station. Okay, his eyes were missing, liver, lungs, kidneys, heart, everything missing. You don't even want to see the photos. I saw the photos.
Yeah, really?
But here's the thing. A kidney can go on a black market for $200,000. One lung can go for $250,000. One heart for $120,000. So has your guest heard anything about these missing young men, mainly black males, just disappearing in the desert?
That's really, really interesting. And I, before ML even gets there, again, we'll be revisiting the subject coming up with another author from a slightly different angle. But go ahead, ML, where are you with that?
I have not heard specifically about black males or organ abduction in terms of black market sales, but that does sound very similar to cases I've heard that are related to this Mexican blood cult, the sangria thing, where they use eyes, lungs, different parts of the body in their ceremonies. And I know, you know, California obviously has a large Hispanic and South American population. There have been cases in L.A. of this type of activity, and, of course, all along the border. So, you know, I would wonder if it's connected to something like that, because that sounds straight out of what has been reported with some of these cases.
Yeah. It just, you know, I know people be looking at it and go, oh, that sounds like an episode of Law and Order or something. I'm telling you, the more you study, they're just from different angles too. Like, there's a lot of people who kind of work this from the Arizona angle, from like Wickenburg going west, right? And from some of the people who were doing Route 66 work, and it's just not out of the question. Unfortunately, it's just because the area is too large to police, and you can't even be sure where people disappeared. That's the, you know, some of the problems of people who are traveling through the Mojave. And I don't think I'm exaggerating, but I talked to a blogger, and ML, you'll find this fascinating. So I talked to a blogger who is now has the blog offline. When I originally contacted her, it was online. And I was like, wow, I really like the research you're doing. And what she was trying to do was keep some of these missing people stories front and center so that people could follow them. And she had all the updates from the police department and the sheriff's department from San Bernardino County. And I contacted her about 6 months later, because again, I was doing work with this TV group here in Phoenix. And she said, I'm out of that business. She said, it scares the hell out of me. She said, I don't want to look into these stories anymore. She said, I started getting clicks on my phone, started getting mysterious, you know, people that she just felt like they were following her, watching her, and you know, breaking in on her phone calls. And she just said, I can't take it. Yeah, I just can't do it. So she gave me her archive material. And she said, here's what I got. She said, don't ever call me again. It's like, okay. So I've got that to work with, and we'll do that for next week. But we've got other people. So thank you, Wayne. We'll hold on to that story, too, in a way, and we'll see if we can't revisit it coming up. Manuel is in San Antonio on Coast to Coast AM, east of the Rockies. Manuel?
Hello. How are you doing, Ian?
Good. Tell me about your tarantula story.
Well, it's kind of funny, but it's weird. We were in the 70s. My dad used to be a truck driver, and we would stop off and go to the restroom when we didn't have a break and everything. And back in the 70s, there weren't all the rest areas that they used to be. Well, we got off, and I saw two little red eyes. I didn't even know tarantulas had eyes, but they got them. And it just got closer and closer. My dad says, get away from there. You know, hurry up and finish because that's a tarantula. And sure enough, my brother, being smaller, he got a rock and threw it at it. That tarantula leaped up between me and my dad, and we both ran up to the truck. And we left my little brother on the road. And we wouldn't even go in the sand. We stayed on the road. Cars passing by and everything honking at us. We didn't care. We didn't want to get close to the tarantulas.
Yeah, but they at least they weren't the 2 foot, you know, big tarantulas that we were talking about earlier, right?
Right, because I was gonna say y'all couldn't think of a name of it, but here in San Antonio, and you talked about the shaman's eel, they're called lechuzas. Lechuzas.
Yeah.
And they people have seen them where they're all black. They like to hide in trees. But you know they're there because they like to rattle the tree limbs. And they know when there's a bad spirit, or they know when somebody's going to die in your house. And they get next to your house or your tree, and they stay there because they're the ones that carry off the spirit. And the shamans of the Indians were the ones who first thought of these. They used to be owls. They used to be ravens. Condors, Texas turkeys, you know, something big, you know, with a large wingspan. Lechuzas.
Well, I appreciate that, Manuel. I'm going to try and squeeze in a couple other callers here. So before we get to the top of the hour, and just hope that at some point we can get ML back on again. Hey, Murphy in Barstow knows a little bit about the caves we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, some of the caves. I was a firefighter for the state for about 28 years and happened to live in the North Indio area, but I've been all over those mountains up there, all over Southern California. But, you know, the stories of Patton with his tank training in Scirocco Summit and Desert Center, there are quite a few caves out there that the government actually built in the side of those mountains, and they use them to store MREs and different pieces of equipment, and they had big steel doors on them. And they were abandoned, and people went in there and pilfered, you know, the food and things out of it. But also on the other side of that equation, the caves, you'd have to drive back in them because they were so deep into the mountain. And when we would go back in there on motorcycles, because you'd need a light, just pitch black in there.
Sure.
And some of the prints that we saw in those caves were huge, just huge, getting back to what Mel said about him being a large man and having 13 size shoes. These were way beyond 13 size shoes.
Well, Murphy, hang on for a second. Let's give him a chance to jump in here because that's really interesting. So could it be that maybe the iron door story could have been related to pre-World War II maneuvers that Patton was doing, getting ready
The iron door in Joshua Tree, no, because that's small. That door is only like 3x3 into this chamber. But I know exactly what she's talking about because I've explored that stuff too, and I'm doing an episode on what's called Patton's Hidden Bunker.
Oh, cool.
And in Desert Center, they had a training camp, and there's a couple caves in the Coxcomb Mountains, which are part of Joshua Tree National Park, and they were used by his guys. You can still see tank tracks and find all sorts of debris from their training, everything from spent bullets to cartridge cartridges, barbed wire, spare tires, stuff like that. And I've got a couple friends who've been searching for those big bunkers that your caller's talking about. There's the remains of his headquarters house, his private house in right by Highway 177 off to the mountains to the east. And I also heard some stories in connection with that, that some of the tanks they used that they didn't want to carry out of there, they actually buried in the sand. And in the tanks, they threw in unused ammunition and damaged guns and stuff like that, just used them as junk depositories and then buried them. And I've got friends that have been searching for them because they think they're going to, you know, find all sorts of cool old stuff from World War II. So that whole area, she's right, is definitely honeycombed with caves and bunkers and old military stuff.
I think we have time for one last caller before we'll wrap it up. Drew is in West Virginia, and you swear to God, you pinky swear, you saw a winged creature.
No, guys, listen to this. I was stationed in Albuquerque, in the middle of New Mexico, central New Mexico, and I've never been to Southern California, but I have had a little bit of backpacking experience in the Chihuahuan Desert in southern New Mexico. So I can vouch for the harshness of the terrain. It seems like every plant down there has a spine or thorn.
Right.
Every creature is willing to attack you. And I wanted to say, being from West Virginia, I wanted to say about the lady with the cooler and the Death Valley story at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
That kind of reminded me, being from West Virginia, that reminded me of a Mothman. Even the fact where you said multidimensional. And I wanted to gloss over something really quick that happened in October of 99.
Got about a little less than a minute.
Soldiers were on the backside of Kirtland Air Force Base, and we saw a chupacabra before I ever knew or heard of or had ever seen or anything written on or knew what a chupacabra was. But when I saw some pictures on the internet, I knew exactly what we had seen. I just want to gloss over that real quick and to lighten the mood a little bit. How about graboids? Anything like that out there in the desert? And I'll hang up and take you guys' answer off the air. Great show.
What was that, grabwood?
Graboids. Yeah. In the Reba McEntire heyday.
I'll have to wait for another show, I'm afraid, because I want to make sure that I could tell everybody, again, to go to coasttocoastam.com, link up to ML Bearman. And about the books, and then sign up on YouTube, on the YouTube channel, so they can get this patent story. Which, when do you think you'll have this another episode come up with people subscribe to your channel?
I've got two that I'm working on right now that I hope to get up in a couple weeks. I've just got to go out and do some drone work near where I want to do the story. So
do nice work. It's a pleasure to follow you, and I look forward to having you back on or hearing that you've been back on again anyway. And thank you for giving us your time tonight. And I'm very much looking forward to an update maybe next week on exactly what we were talking about that statuary that was found out in the desert. So hope you had a great time, ML. And to everybody, thank you again for making space for me to come back for a little while on Coast to Coast. I want to thank you in particular George Knapp, who I'll be on for next week, but also Nathan, who's been running the board, Donna, who's been handling the phones, Chris Boris, who produced, Lisa Lyon, and also to everybody who's jumped on board at Deacon Punnett on Twitter. We can talk more about this later on this week. In the meantime, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.